This is Emotional Connection with Raphael Kushner. It's my personal and professional passion to help people access their emotions directly. This simple but rare process, for those who master it, creates greater wisdom, success, and most of all, well-being. Each week on this podcast, I share a recent session recorded with a client facing a particular challenge. This gives you, the listener, a chance to see the process of emotional connection in an up-close, unedited fashion, applied to practical, everyday concerns. Whenever you get the gist of the issue at hand and want to dive into the process itself, feel free to skip ahead in the podcast. For more information on this work, please visit my website, livingthequestions.org. This is also where you can reach me to ask questions and provide feedback, schedule your own private session by phone, get listings of upcoming events in your area, and learn about our unique year-long program. Once again, that's livingthequestions.org. Thank you so much for joining us, and now, enjoy the podcast. This afternoon, we're speaking with Anita. Anita, it's good to have you with us.
Why, thank you. I'm glad to be with you.
And so, as in all of these sessions, Anita and I are just going to go into our cocoon, and we're going to have a session in which we use the lens of emotional connection and a deeper kind of presence to unravel some stuck places. And the fact that others will be listening to this, we hope, is a service to them, but we're going to pretend for the next while that it's just the two of us. Are you ready to go, Anita?
I'm ready.
All right. So shared with me that a really important issue in your life is the desire to have a really good, appropriate, intimate relationship, something that really works for you, and that it's been quite some time that you've been looking for that and haven't been able to find it. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Okay. And so you mentioned to me that you've been divorced, is it for about 11 years?
Yes, right? I've been out of my marriage for 11 and divorced
Oh, okay.
About 9.
Yes. So what I'd like to do is kind of start out by having you just kind of free-form ramble for me, meaning that you don't have to worry about it all making sense or connecting all the dots. But what I'd like
okay.
to know is, first of all, a little bit of the kinds of relationships that you have been drawing to you, even if they're really short-lived, you know, since that time that you left your marriage and began to feel like you were open to finding other people again. What has that been like for you?
Okay, when I was first single, actually it was before the internet, and I met a number of men and had some short-term relationships, some of them about 6 months. Some of them were really good. There was one guy who was an aerobics instructor, and I really liked him a lot, but he was just out of his marriage, too, quite recently, and I knew it wasn't something that was going to last, but I really learned a lot about the relation from that relationship because he was really kind, attentive, and it was like a nice base. I had a relationship for 6 months, and it turned out that this guy that I was going out with was actually still married, and mm-hmm. so that was not a very good, you know, situation. And it ended, and then all about a year later, I found out that he was actually still married.
Mm-hmm. And that was after the aerobics instructor?
That was after the aerobics instructor. And
was
then
it
I,
that, before you go on, what was it in with the relationship that you had that had a lot of kindness to it, and that was a real relief for you? What brought that one to a close?
He decided that he wanted somebody that was a little bit more athletic than I was, I think, that really liked to ride bikes and you know, do some of those kinds of things that he liked. And like, I was his first love right after his marriage, and so he just decided that he wanted to meet other people.
Right.
And I understood that.
Yeah. Okay. So then you were going to continue. You're going to tell me after the time when you found out that the person was actually married, and then what came next?
Well, then I met somebody who I did for about a year, and I really liked him a lot. He was a teacher, and he lived about an hour from here, and we would spend weekends together and drive back and forth. And it was really a good relationship, and I was actually thinking about moving and there and working at a nearby college. And then he kind of pulled back and said that he really wasn't ready for a long-term relationship. And he was a recovering alcoholic. And I could see that although I really loved him, that there were things about that he wasn't emotionally ready to to really commit himself. He still had some stuff to do, a lot of debt, and, you know, things that he needed to work on. And in fact, I saw him again about 5 years later, and it was still very nice, but my feeling was that he really hadn't grown that much, you know, from where he was. And
right.
So it wasn't, it still wasn't going to work. But
gotcha. Okay.
It was comfortable.
So, yeah, so just keep going with
okay, after,
whatever brings up current.
Yeah, right. And after that year-long one, I've met a lot of people. I don't think that there's ever been anything, you know, that's lasted more than maybe a month or two. You know, I've gone out of town, you know, through people that I've met on the internet and met people, you know, from different distances. My preference would be to find someone around here, but it just seems like I'm pretty clear about what works for me, and it just seems like it's pretty difficult to find someone with those qualifications.
Right. Okay, so I'm going to start off by, you know, taking a guess here, and I want you to tell me if this feels right to you. My guess is that you're a person who's very resourceful, and that given the internet and all the different ways of, you know, looking for people and finding yourself, you know, in the environments where those kinds of quality people might be, my guess is that on those kinds of practical dimensions that you've got it handled and you know what to do, and that your concern isn't so much that you need, you know, any kind of quote-unquote advice about that. It's just, you know, why isn't this showing up, the kind of relationship that you want. Is that accurate?
I think that that really is pretty accurate. I mean, I have a life besides, you know, looking for this relationship. I write poetry and am very involved in the poetry community and belong to a local Unitarian Universalist church and go there, and I just don't, unfortunately, seem to meet people there either that seem to be, you know, it's sometimes it's really difficult to find someone where you can really get to know them a little bit. In those kind of situations, I think that that's why at times, you know, when I write, I'm basically an introverted person, so the internet, at least for a while, worked pretty well for me because I can write and we can learn a lot about each other. And
right. So what the reason that I wanted to start out there and just make sure that you, you know, were on top of those details, and also that, as you said, that you have a full life and that you follow your own passions, and is because what we're talking about is something that so many people can relate to. It's the mysterious element. It's
you got it.
Trying to understand, you know, what I'm attracting, what I'm not attracting, why is that happening? And there are a lot of people who will give a lot of advice about that, you know, a la The Secret, the Law of Attraction, you know. And I think, you know, some of that stuff can be helpful, but it also can be really confusing. And what I want to do is just delve with you a little bit into what we might be able to see, what you already know, or perhaps, you know, some new pieces of information about your own magnet, so to speak, so that if possible, we can use the process of emotional connection to help change that magnet, to help so that what you draw into your life through the mystery is really in alignment with what you most want. And again, just to clarify, the reason I'm calling it the mystery is because every time we fire up the computer, we don't know who's going to be there. Every time we go to church on Sunday,
exactly,
we don't know, and something
right.
new could happen. And also, somebody who we've looked past 10 times suddenly might look different to us, and that's also something that really isn't fully in our control. And so there's possibility in every moment, even when it seems like there isn't any, but we really need to delve into this place of mystery to try to find out what we can do to, you know, create, to co-create the magic, so to speak.
Yes,
so
yeah.
So in that regard, what I want to ask you about is, first of all, going backwards to your family and your upbringing, if you had to describe just, you know, in one paragraph, what were the signature aspects of your upbringing, what would you say? Mother and father, et cetera.
My mother and my father was born in Europe and came here as a young child. He always worked really hard. My mother's parents were born in Denmark and came here. She lived on a farm. My parents ran a small diner in upstate New York, and I was like the first one to go to college. My father's mother was my grandmother, who lived in Denmark, was a widow, and, you know, had always struggled, and so sending me to college was, you know, a big thing, and so I went to college and became a teacher, and my parents were always very strict, and I always felt like I was trying to reach their standards, and I wasn't always quite good enough. I mean, that's a theme that's come up before in my past.
So in the work that you've done, because I recognize and appreciate that, you know, you've done a lot of your own introspection and healing work, you've already identified that a really important part of your upbringing was that your parents were very strict.
Yep.
They had high expectations for you. And inside of you, the way that lived was you were always striving for the ultimate approval, but it seemed like you could never really get it. And so inside of you, there was a setup to always feel like, you know, you're falling short, you're not good enough, in some way you're unworthy.
Yeah, I still struggle with it.
Sure, sure. Okay, and prior to your marriage that you mentioned at the beginning, were there any other significant relationships?
Any other significant? I had dated some, you know, I dated in college, but I don't think there was ever any long-term significant relationships.
Okay.
Nothing that stands out in my mind. I mean, you know, there were a few people here and there, but nothing long-term or really significant.
Okay. So what about the marriage? You were married for how many years, did you say?
I was married for 20, almost 27 years.
27 years.
Yes.
And I know that in terms of the intimacies between two people, that's, you know, a lifetime, and there are so many aspects to a relationship. But again, just in terms of shortcuts, if you had to sum up what the primary one or two relationship dynamics were between you and your husband at the time, what would you say?
That's a good question. Well, part of it was that on a level, we were really good friends, and we worked well together. We did projects well together. We did some things at our church together where we sort of created these services, and we really balanced each other off really well. And most of the time, we had a good time. We used to travel together, and it was very enjoyable. There was an aspect of inequality there. He did not have an education, and I never thought, I mean, it wasn't that significant to me, but later on he revealed that it was quite significant to him. And there were some aspects of a power struggle that went on between us. And so there were some aspects of intimacy that were not real strong. And the other part of it was that he tended to be kind of critical of me, too, sometimes.
So
sort of parental critical, sort of.
So even though underneath he had some degree of inferiority because of the lack of education, he you know, placed himself in a position to be critical of you, or that's how it naturally arose, and maybe even that was a compensation, but that's just what you found.
There was a, you know, sort of a number of subtle put-downs, and I think that in some cases, then I reacted in the same way, so it was became this very subtle, probably not too openly visible struggle that went on.
Mm-hmm. And how did you come to get divorced?
That's another interesting story, but quickly, he had a medical condition that was corrected by some kind of modern medical miracle, and that had gone on for a couple of years and caused some strain in our relationship. Right after it was cured, this other woman who we had known in high school came back into his life, and he started having an affair. And so at that point, it was difficult to save the marriage.
And who was it, a mutual decision to split up, or was one of you the driver?
I was, well, you know, actually, he was sort of ambivalent around it, and he wanted to sort of hang on to both of us, but, you know, when it came right down to it, I didn't want to put up with that. So
right.
I said, you know, let's get divorced. And,
right, right.
You okay. know.
So when you told me that the pattern that was established early on with your family had to do with criticism and a feeling of, you know, not being good enough. And then you also spoke about that pattern in your marriage. And you said, actually, just, you know, quite candidly, you still struggle with that
mm-hmm.
to this day. So can you tell me a little bit more about what that means in this time of your life to struggle with that feeling? How does that come up? What does it look like for you?
Well, little things like I've always wanted to be thinner, and I'm not. You know, I don't, and I'm always sort of struggling with my weight, so that's been an ongoing issue. I would like to be like, maybe 25 pounds thinner.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thing. And sometimes at work, I have some issues where I can't really concentrate a lot. I mean, I can concentrate, but I can never quite do as much work, I think, as I think I should be doing. And so mm-hmm. that becomes a source of frustration. I think I'm easily distracted by lots of different things, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, that's something that I'm
uh-huh.
struggling with, and then I'm never quite as neat as I think I should be. You know, those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. So
things that I struggle with.
So it sounds like, you know, if I'm hearing you correctly, that that those are places in which you decide or assess yourself to be, you know, falling short, that you're
mm-hmm.
not as thin as you should be, that you're easily distracted. At the same time, I know that, you know, from just the wisdom I can hear in you, you know, from our conversation till now, that you're aware of the fact that those are not, you know, what we would say, you know, killer blows, meaning that there are lots of people who are 25 pounds overweight and who have,
right.
who get distracted at work, who have, you know, wonderful intimate relationships, or who also have a healthy self-esteem, right? So I guess what I'm saying is that those marks against you in your own consciousness, I know you're aware, live as serious within you, but they're not, you know, sort of external to you, objective causes for the verdict of being, you know, unworthy or not good enough, right? So I want to draw that distinction between how it
looks. Right, okay, I've never really looked at it that way, but yeah,
you're right. So then what I want to find out from you is, how did you experience, if you do or when you do, how do you experience that sense of not good enough? Does it come up? Do you push it away? Do you find yourself, you know, kind of stuck in it? Is it off to the side? because I guess I should be more clear about one thing. Now I'm asking about the experience, the actual felt sense of there being something wrong with you or you're not measuring up, as opposed to evidence for your self-judgment about that. Do you see the distinction I'm making?
Right. I mean, how do I emotionally react to those kinds of things is what you're asking me when I experience them.
I guess maybe we should start with what you started with. So when you deal with weight issues and,
okay.
You know, you maybe look at yourself in the mirror, you judge yourself as not as fit or attractive as you might like to be, what happens then? What do you do with that initial ugh that comes up?
What do I do with that? Well, I think I push it. I mean, I don't necessarily accept myself the way I am. I mean, because I'm always trying to be thinner, although I'm not necessarily getting there, you know. It's just kind of always there.
Mm-hmm. Right.
What do I emotionally do with it?
Well, no, I think you've answered the question. It was very pretty.
Okay.
Good. So, because this is what I'm getting, that there are ways that you judge yourself, that there are, that we know that those judgments are real inside of you, but they're not, you know, objective. They're subjective judgments.
Mm-hmm.
And that when you face them, they feel bad, and you kind of push that bad feeling away as much as possible because you don't want to feel that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's the most common kind of reaction. That's what we refer to in this work as resistance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which simply means that you have a challenging or unpleasant feeling or part of yourself that it feels, you know, too hard for whatever reason or inappropriate to embrace, and so you push it away. And how that comes into play in that magic field of co-creation that we were talking about before is this, that you are cutting off or distancing or rejecting from the field of your awareness and acceptance parts of you, you know, because they're not good enough. So the internal relationship that you have is one in which you're not getting to feel the qualities of connection and intimacy fully that you would want in general, but also particularly from a partner. Another way of saying that is that your internal environment is not parallel yet to the kind of environment that you would like to have with a partner.
Ah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that does make sense. That makes, yeah. In other words, because I have these feelings of unease inside of myself, and I'm not accepting of myself, that creates some kind of a rejection to whatever energy might be out there to any partner that would.
Mm-hmm. Right, and let's look at that, you know, at, you know, from the standpoint of your personal legacy, right? You know that from your parents and on into your marriage, there was an external, not good enough judgment coming your way that then you have internalized, and essentially it's at least in part what you're continuing to live out.
Okay. Wow.
So what we'd like to do is be as effective as possible in changing your internal environment so that you're having the kind of relationship with yourself that you want to have with someone else.
Wow.
And then rather than, you know, looking for someone to fix you or to provide what's missing in your life, you already have that quality of relationship in yourself, and since really in the universe most of the time like attracts like, you become a magnet for that kind of relationship that you started off, you know, telling me that you were looking for.
Ah, right. Because a lot of, all right. Boy, it makes lots of good sense to me.
And so there's more good news than that, which is that what you need to do if you want to co-create that magic is relatively straightforward.
Okay.
And it's reverse your approach to the parts of you that you judge as not good enough. And I'm going to be very specific about what that means.
Okay.
So the parts of you that feel that way, or that you, parts of you that have those beliefs, we've already talked about a couple of times. You know, they're not, they are beliefs. They're not truths, right?
Right.
They're not independently verifiable, right?
Right, right. So, you know, I think that that was one reason why I sent you the photos.
Uh-huh.
You know, anyhow.
Right. So there are other parts of you that recognize that's not even true. I mean, I probably am good enough, and I'm probably more than attractive, and I'm probably not, I'm worthy of the kind of relationship I want most likely, but what we're talking about are those parts of you that are the legacy of what you were describing before. And ordinarily, the information that you're going to get is that you need to somehow challenge those beliefs or replace them with ones that are more positive, do things like that. From our perspective, we want to do the exact opposite. We want to help you embrace those parts of yourself. And do it directly so that you feel what it's like to love the parts of you that have seemed the most unlovable. And in that process, you really do change your internal environment.
Mm.
So, and with all people, and with you specifically right now, I never ask anybody to take that on faith. I like to have you, you know, try that and see. So are you willing to do a little experimenting with me?
Sure, I'm willing to experiment.
Okay, good. So first of all, I asked you before, you know, what happens when you have that first, you know, like when you look in the mirror or whatever that is that brings it about. So do you notice where you feel that in your body when you have that that first initial response to anything that you think is less than what it should be about yourself? Literally, like, where physically do you first feel that?
Oh, right down in the middle of my stomach, sort of, you know, right down below my heart, just a little bit, right down in there.
Mm-hmm.
In the middle, right, I think that's where I experience that.
Okay, so are you noticing any sensation there right now?
I can feel that spot.
Okay. So let's just for a moment call that the first place of location for the not good enough constellation inside of you. Okay?
First place of what?
The first place of its location.
Okay, right.
Yeah. So, because it could move around, it could shift, but that's where you're noticing it.
Right.
So what I want you to do is put your attention there, and I'm going to kind of increase it a little bit by just reminding you that, oh, you've tried to lose weight, you've done this and that. I mean, for God's sake, you had a relationship with an aerobic instructor. And it just seems like, you know, you've got this, you know, this really, you know, this you know, body type that's not going to change. It's just not what you want. And, you know, you, lots of other people suck it up and change and lose that weight. And you just, for some reason, you know, you're not able to do that because there's something wrong with you. Okay, now, I'm not saying I believe that, but I wanted to re-stimulate that feeling for you. So
right.
as you hear that, this idea that, oh, really, I'm just, you know, I must not be good enough to lose that weight because if I was, I would have done it a long time ago. So as you hear me say that, turn your attention to your body and see, is it there that you notice the sensation, or has it shifted in any way?
Well, it's there, but it's also up between my shoulders.
Okay. So see if for the next few moments you can keep your attention on that feeling. And don't try to understand it or change it or make it go away. Let it be that your only job is to stay very attentive to it, noticing every little thing you can about it, by being really up close and personal and curious about its qualities. So just to revisit the instruction, this is the feeling that you're having right now that gets stimulated around just not measuring up, never being good enough. And right now, instead of pushing it away, you're openly connecting to it and noticing everything you can about it. So I'm going to be quiet for just a few moments to give you the space to just keep noticing whatever happens. It could stay the same, it could get worse, it could go away. Just let yourself notice everything that comes up naturally without straining to look for anything at all. Okay? Is that clear?
Okay, I got to change phones, unfortunately.
Okay.
We'll
wait for you to do that. It's a perfect time to have a...
yeah, I know. Isn't that awful? Okay, you there?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm on the other phone. Okay, we'll get back into it again.
All right, so I'll... not that I like to do it, but I'll re-stimulate for you.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Just that feeling like you could try day in and day out, and you know, why even try? Because, you know, it's just something about you. You're just never going to be able to get it together to be, you know, everything that you want it to be or that someone else would want you to be. Just who you are. Just not good enough. So find that feeling, and I'll be quiet for a moment as you just surf it with your attention. What do you notice?
Well, the feeling on my back, I remember this big vulture that used to hang around on my back, mm-hmm. and all these big, heavy bags that I used to carry around with me. And I sort of thrown them out, but there's still this little bird back there that's going peck, peck,
mm-hmm.
peck, peck, just sort of hitting, you know?
Mm-hmm. So here's what I want you to do to keep going, because that's great that you saw that, is I want you to just, for these next few moments, instead of saying, you know, get away, bird, you know, just let yourself be pecked. Let the bird be there, and let your attention be gentle and even caring, like, it's okay, I know you have to do this, I'm here, though, I'm going to pay attention, I'm not going away. And just literally cradle that bird and that pecking feeling for a few moments, just to see what happens. Good. So just for a few more seconds, keep going. Good. Excellent. So what happens as you do that?
Well, at first it sort of kept pecking, but then it mm-hmm. sort of gently hit its head in my back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like
mm-hmm.
sort of rubbed its head more
mm-hmm.
playfully on my back, and so
mm-hmm.
I could feel it back there, and then it was like, it was there, but it was more, instead of pecking, it was sort of, just sort of there for me, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So there's something that is specific to your experience I want to highlight, and that is that some people tend to be visual, and when they go into their bodies to feel their emotions or their resistance to emotion, they get images. And
mm-hmm.
it's really great to recognize that those images are natural. You know, we weren't
mm-hmm.
saying, you know, what does your inner child look like? Or you know, it wasn't
right,
artificial.
Yeah.
It just arose out of your own awareness. And so
right, yeah.
when that happens, it's really good to just stay with it in the same way that you did. And sometimes the images shift and they give us a sense of the overall internal shift that we're experiencing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got the image, I want to make sure I got this right from you, that, you know, there was this pecking beak, which is hard, and, you know, kind of adversarial, and then as you stayed with it, it kind of, almost the way that a bird will tuck its head softly under its wing when it goes to sleep, that it turned
right.
and sort of tucked into you in a way that seemed tender. Would you say
right.
that was accurate?
Right, right.
Okay.
Tender and nourishing. And at first it was just kind of instead of pecking at me, it was rubbing its beak, sort of the side of its beak up and down my back. So that wasn't, you know, as sharp.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, you know, that's a really beautiful evocation of exactly what it was that I wanted to share with you. It was maybe, what would we say, 20 or 30 seconds
right.
of you turning to something inside of yourself that seemed, you know, negative and kind of insistent and biting, literally, it was a beak. And with your attention, you noticed that it turned into something that was really wanting connection from you and responded in kind, you know, to your tender awareness. It responded tenderly to you. Does that
right.
does that accurately reflect your experience?
Yeah, and something else kind of happened because I have a cat, and as I was thinking this, my cat must have been attracted because he came and sat on my lap.
That is really fascinating because I've had that experience too, and I remember with my first counselor, she said that cats, you know, are very sensitive to that kind of energy. Whenever people are allowing themselves to be vulnerable and letting that soft energy come in, that often
yeah.
cats are very attracted to that
yeah.
specifically. So how wonderful to have that kind of external affirmation of your internal process.
Yeah.
So now I'm going to take a kind of a leap with you conceptually from that experience that you had, which is to say that any and every moment in which you have any kind of feeling or judgment about yourself as not being good enough,
mm-hmm.
you have the capacity to be aware of it quickly. First of all, because you'll feel something like what you felt. You know, you had that before even the pecking, you know, you had that tightness
right.
in your center, and then you had it moving up your shoulder blades. So that's one way that you can notice it is in your body. Another
mm-hmm.
way you can notice it is just by the very nature of the thoughts. And what I mean is any thought about yourself that is critical. If you notice it as soon as possible,
okay.
then your job is to just detach from it. Not to fight back against it, but just to say, oh, there's a negative thought. You know, thank you for sharing. But I'm not going to get on the train in which, you know, 1,000 other negative thoughts follow, and I'm not even aware that I'm on the train.
Ah.
So, okay. So it's both through the through the physical sensation and also through the quality of thought that you can recognize that this part of you, the not good enough part of you, is showing up. And from now on, when it shows up, you can just realize that it's showing up not so much for you to believe what it has to say, but really showing up because it needs your attention. It needs your acceptance in the way that you just practiced.
Okay.
So this is, you know, it sounds simple, but it's also kind of revolutionary because it means that you have something that you can do specifically and practically to shift what it feels like to be who you are and then by extension what you put out in terms of your energy to the world around you. It's going from a quality of resistance to one of acceptance, but not as just a concept, but through your compassionate attention. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. It really does.
Are there any Because I love when there are. It's really helpful for you to be honest. Are there any places in you that you would say, you know, are what I would call yeah buts? Like, well, that's, you know, easy to say, you know, harder to do, or, you know, this sounds good, but it's not going to work for me. I mean, or even just questions that you have so far as we've been exploring this process.
Are there any yeah buts? There's a few of them. I don't know if I can explain where they're coming from. It's like, so this is going to do it, you know. That's kind of my reaction.
Well, you mean like, really? This is going to do
real.
It? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Really. Yeah. This is really going to change. Yeah.
Right. So what I like to share with people is that it's really important not to take anything that I say on faith, and not even to believe that, you know, just in a short experience over the phone that it's all, you know, either done or that you know, you have some kind of proof. Much more importantly is that you really try this orientation out in the laboratory of your own life. But so what we want to do is we want to get a little bit more refined to make sure that you have all the tools, right?
Okay.
And then you can go out and practice, and then somewhere down the road we can have another session. We can see how it's going and where it's working and where you're still feeling stuck. But,
okay, sure.
But, you know, I want to tell you a little bit of a story to help orient this a little more. I worked with a client once who was much more overweight than you and had decided that she couldn't bear to look at herself, so she covered all the mirrors in her house that would show her anywhere from the neck down.
Okay.
And in this same process that I'm talking about, what I asked her to do, when she was ready, without stress and very gently, a few moments at a time, to take off the coverings to the mirrors and start to look. And when she would start to look, she would feel, sad. She would feel hurt. She would feel lost. I mean, all kinds of horrible feelings. And I just guided her in the same very specific way that I did with you, where, the idea is to use your attention to place it exactly where you're feeling the sensations in your body. And just to get very close to them and allow them and cradle them as if they were a crying infant. And in the process, you're not trying to pressure them into change. You're not trying to understand them at all, even. It's as if you're just saying, as I mentioned before, it's all right, it's okay, I'm here. You're loving this hurting part of you or this critical part of you with your attention. And in the process of doing that, you're uniting your mind and your body, and you're creating a wholeness. And for this woman that I was describing, you know, even though, as I said, her weight issues were much more serious than yours, she found that it was really a revelation to her, because when she did that, she no longer had food cravings. In other words, in the moment in which she was really connected to herself,
mm-hmm.
the cravings weren't there.
Right.
The cravings were a sign and a symptom of resistance.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as she dropped the resistance and went to a place of acceptance, then she didn't have them.
Okay.
So whenever she had the cravings from then on, she was able to meet them in this way and then had choice. Because our perspective here is that when you're in resistance to any part of yourself, then your life is run by that resistance. And you make choices and you unconsciously choose behaviors that are about avoiding that feeling. And in fact, then you're not free. You're run by your resistance. And then what's worse is that since it's not a strategy that works for adults, you end up attracting to yourself over and over the very thing that you don't want, because it's calling for your attention and it's going to keep calling in all kinds of ways until you're ready to embrace it. So
Okay, so would you say that avoidance is also a form of resistance?
Yes, definitely.
Okay.
So, but let me put it another way, is that in that mysterious field of possibility that we were talking about before,
right,
you are continuing to experience the lack of a good enough relationship. Specifically because you're being called internally to embrace that not good enough part of yourself. And once you do that, I mean, of course, it's not a one-time only thing, but once you begin to do that with some depth and consistency, you will experience that wholeness that you seek outside of yourself within. And once you experience it directly within, you'll begin to attract it from without as well.
Wow. That makes a whole lot of sense to me.
So
it really does. And what's interesting is because I've done a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, and yet there's still this little piece missing, little pieces. That there's this niggling little part of myself that keeps telling me that.
Well, this little, you have done a lot of work, and this is a little piece, and it is sort of, in a way, the last and most important piece, not just for you, but
right,
for all of us,
right,
because there's always some part of ourselves, it's not the same for each of us, but some
right,
part of us that's the hardest to accept.
Okay.
And for you, you know, it shows up in this issue around relationship, it shows up in being self-critical, it shows up in weight. But now what I want to do is just add two last pieces of the puzzle for you that hopefully will give you enough to go out and start practicing moment by moment by moment. The first part of it is that we want to replace the idea of willpower with self-acceptance. And I say that because with willpower, it means one part of you is making a choice against another part of you. And when that happens, there's always inevitable pushback. The other part of you might lose temporarily, but it's still going to find a way to get its day. So that's why, you know, an addict, gives up alcohol and then takes up smoking. Or somebody in a weight loss program binges, you know, and then gains everything back relatively quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So what we want to do, as I said, is use self-acceptance as a replacement. And this is how that works. So let's say that you decided that as a part of your self-acceptance, you wanted to bring this approach to your issues around food and exercise and diet, and you want to love yourself into a leaner body as opposed to push yourself. So every moment that you have a choice about exercise or diet, is new. You can always respond completely new in any given moment. So just like the woman in the example that I gave, you know, when it comes to your cravings, when it comes to your portion sizes, when it comes to the duration of exercise, every day presents these opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
And when you notice that you want to make a choice that is maybe the compulsive one,
mm-hmm,
maybe the one that you're used to that's not the healthiest,
mm-hmm,
rather than stealing your will against it or even criticizing yourself for having it or just giving in to it,
okay,
you want to create a little bit of a delay in saying yes. So, for instance, maybe it would be time to exercise and you just think like, oh, I don't want to do it today. I'm tired from work. I want to just watch TV. So you notice that you're about to make a choice that isn't in the service of the, you know, the weight loss that you're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
So rather than saying, no, darn it, I'm going to go out there and exercise and create that environment of willpower followed by pushback, what you're going to do is going to say something like this. Okay, well, maybe I will, maybe I won't. But let's just pause for a moment before making the final decision. Turn my attention to my body. And just feel. You know, it's as if you're taking off the mirrors, metaphorically, taking off the coverings of the mirrors just like she did. And you're not even saying that it'll be wrong if you decide to watch TV instead of exercise. What you're saying is that you're going to wait maybe 30 seconds, maybe a minute. And you're not just going to wait, but during the wait, you're going to turn your attention to your body, and you're going to notice and connect to all the feelings that arise, and you're going to notice all the thoughts and beliefs that arise in that same compassionate way that we were just practicing. Now, if you start with 30 seconds, pretty soon you'll be able to get to 3 minutes, and then 5 minutes, and then 10 minutes. And the idea isn't that you need to keep spending more and more time, or that there's a way that you have to do it. The idea is that you're just exploring, and that's all it is. It's an exploration. So if you happen to spend that amount of time, and after, let's say, 3 minutes, you decide, okay, well, no, I really do just want to rest. I don't want to exercise. That's not wrong or bad. That's the second part of what I wanted to share with you. We call it the no-fail zone. You know, you can't do anything wrong, because when you don't succeed in your original intention, it is new information about what happened right then and there that was so challenging. So another way of saying that is, or just looking at it from another example, you know, I'm going to eat this ice cream or I'm not going to eat this ice cream. And so I live into those feelings for whatever, 3 or 4 minutes. And then I decide, you know what, I'm going to have that ice cream. Forget it. I'm not even going to do this. And you stop doing it with a certain frustration and you just, you know, kind of chow down, right? Okay. So that would be a recipe to get down on yourself. I thought I was doing so well and then look what happened. But from this perspective of the no-fail zone, the idea is, what happened right then that was overpowering? What can I see about it in retrospect, so that when that experience comes again, I have just a little more awareness and a little more capacity to stay connected? Mm-hmm. So either way, you win. Either you don't have the ice cream in that moment, or you do have it, but you've learned something that can help you live through that challenge the next time it comes.
Okay.
So this same practice that I'm describing, we do it with addiction. We do it with all kinds of compulsions. We do it with just about anything. We create a situation where you go into the part of you or into the experience that has been the most challenging. And as long as you can connect to it in that compassionate way, then you're creating healing every single time. A little bit more, a little bit more, and then your internal environment really starts to change. And so does the external. So not only in your case would you find, you know, that the weight would start to come off,
right,
but you know, you also might find yourself noticing other people or being noticed in other ways, and not just because your body has changed, but because, you know, you've made this internal change. So what we just talked about was taking that practice of compassionate attention and adding to it the idea of self-acceptance when you're challenged, delaying the gratification of something that might not be in your best interest, in order to use that moment to access the feelings that you most often push away, and then to do that as long as you can until you reach a place of expansion and openness in which most likely you won't have the usual compulsion anymore. But if you do, and even if you have to give in to it, you still have more information about the place for next time to give a little extra of your compassionate attention. So does that sound clear to you?
Yeah, I think that it does. I'm just trying to think how it would work in other areas. The ice cream is a pretty tangible situation, but if it's like a thought pattern where you're sort of beating yourself about certain things.
Okay, so that's it's great that you brought that up, and that because we're trying to be as specific and real life as possible, and you're just noticing that we were working with an example that you can kind of grasp pretty easily. But a
right.
lot of the times when you might go down the slippery slope, it's not as clear as that, right?
It's more beating oneself, and it's not
right.
like, is it, you know, I.
So when people say, rock. When people say, you know, I beat myself up all the time.
Right.
It's interesting. It's an interesting idea. It's an interesting way of describing what happens. But I never leave it right there because everybody is different. So can you tell me what that means to you when you beat yourself up in the realm of your mind? What's happening? See if you can break that down for me.
Well, it's like... I can't do this. I can't do this good enough. There must be something wrong with me. You know, yada, yada, yada kind of thing.
Okay. So we spoke a little bit earlier about the way that these resistant places in us kick up that kind of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, almost sometimes to get our attention to the feeling, but even apart from that, it's just a natural outgrowth of our resistance. So
mm-hmm.
there's something even more straightforward, even easier to do with those thoughts.
Okay.
But the prerequisite is that you notice them.
Right.
Right. So, and I mentioned to you before that, you know, if a thought doesn't have either a neutral or an uplifting quality to it, then it's most likely a resistant thought of some kind.
Okay.
If it shuts you down, if it makes you feel bad, if you scrunch up inside, even just inside of your mind, with your focus or concentration, those are all resistant thoughts. So I would invite you from this moment forward to just pay attention not even to the content of the thoughts, but the quality of the thoughts.
Okay.
And any thought that seems to scrunch you up
okay.
is a thought with which you can work.
Okay.
And once you have the awareness that you have, you know, to use the technical term, a scrunchy thought, then you turn your attention to it.
Mm-hmm.
And by turning your attention to it, it stops automatically.
Okay.
So I like to make a big dramatic story about this. I like to describe the quality of your attention in that moment once you noticed a negative thought. I'm going to do it with words because I can't show it to you. But the words are just pointing to the way you would shift your inner experience. And
mm-hmm.
it would be something like this. Oh, a negative thought.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome. Thank you for coming.
Okay.
Stay as long as you like and take up all the space you need. So it's an unqualified, spacious, welcome attention. Or I should say welcoming attention.
Right.
And as soon as you do that, the thought, kind of like, you know, the man behind the curtain, just sort of shrivels up from whence he came.
Okay.
Another way to say that is that when you meet a resistant thought with
mm-hmm.
resistance, you just create more resistance. Because
it's that fight against fight kind of thing.
Yes,
yeah.
Resistance is looking for a fight.
Right.
When you meet it with acceptance, it has nothing to do but dissipate.
Ah. Okay.
And so... even though compassionate attention is always required,
mm-hmm.
in relation to thought, when it's negative, just by turning to it and noticing it's there, that does the trick. And then the compassionate attention or the deeper inquiry coming from a compassionate place is just the icing on the cake.
Okay.
But there's one other thing I want to add about these kinds of thoughts, which hopefully can be helpful to you.
Mm-hmm.
Most people who have negative thoughts or critical thoughts, whether it's about themselves or other people,
mm-hmm.
judge themselves even for having the thoughts. So that's another way of heaping resistance upon resistance. And what I want to tell you is that you're not responsible for your thoughts. Now, this may sound like a strange thing coming from a, you know, a spiritual orientation, but we actually don't sit in the back of our brains putting molecules together that fire neurons that turn into thoughts. We don't do that. What happens is thoughts arise.
Mm-hmm.
And once thoughts arise, we're responsible for what we do with them.
How we receive them.
Yeah. And so what I'm suggesting is the most loving way to accept any thought, especially the ones you don't like or don't want, and especially the ones that are harsh about yourself. And it mirrors what I was describing about physical emotions.
Right.
And it's a little bit different when you do it with thoughts, not just because of the how that we just talked about, but also because thoughts are a little bit more evanescent. You know, they come and they go like quicksilver,
mm-hmm.
whereas emotions are sort of denser, and it takes a while to surf them to a place of greater openness.
Mm-hmm.
But that's where they're different. The approach is basically the same.
Mm-hmm.
And since thoughts and feelings are usually influencing one another in a kind of a feedback loop,
mm-hmm.
when you work with one, you also are working with the other indirectly. And so you can focus more on one side of that equation or another, or ideally just keep practicing with both.
Mm-hmm.
And to take everything that we're saying and kind of wrap it up into one basic concept, you know, people always say that until you can really love another person well or have a really loving relationship, you have to learn how to love yourself. But that's a cliche unless we talk about what it really means.
Unless
and
you really know how
from
to do
my
it.
Perspective, sure. Pardon me?
Right, unless you really know how to do it effectively.
Right, and so from
make
my perspective,
yeah,
what we're talking about
right.
is actually the way to love yourself. And what it means is creating a passionate, I said passionate, but that's true, but what I really meant was compassionate.
Right.
A compassionate, attentive embrace of the parts of yourself that you like the least and want the least.
Mm-hmm.
And when you can love those parts as they are, just with your attention, you're creating inside of yourself the relationship that you most want to have. And that is the beginning of the change that you're looking for. And as long as you don't think of it as okay, well, I'm doing that and I've been doing it for a week now and, you know, where's my guy?
Yeah, right.
As long as you don't do it for the result, then the shift is bound to happen. So another way to say that is we can only do what is in our power to do. And then we also, if we're going to do this the most skillfully, need to surrender the outcome. Meaning, your intention is to love yourself whole through your compassionate attention.
Mm-hmm.
That is an end in and of itself. That's the way that you want to live.
Mm-hmm.
And if out of that you also find yourself succeeding in some other intentions, such as, you know, losing weight or, you know, finding a good relationship,
mm-hmm.
that's wonderful and it's beautiful, but you can't enter into the process with a condition that, you know, you're doing this only to reach your goal, and if you don't reach your goal, it didn't work. And that may seem, in a way, like a repudiation of what I said in the beginning, because, you know, this was ultimately supposed to be about helping you find that relationship that you want.
Right.
And it is, but there's a sort of a subtlety to the magic, and that is that you more fully empower the magic when you surrender the results or the outcome.
Mm-hmm.
But, and you know, it almost sounds like a trick, but it's the opposite of a trick.
Yeah.
If you do it as a trick, there's still a kind of resistance built into it. But that is the paradox of the spiritual path, is that we need to accept unconditionally what it is we've pushed away And even though we know that's going to lead to the successes that we've sought, we can't do it for that purpose. We do it for the purpose of being fully present to ourselves, and loving our experience. And it's only then that the best possible results follow.
Yeah. It's a lot. But.
Yeah, well, and of course, this is, a few moments, and now, it's the time to practice, and what I say to you is what I say to everyone who I work with, whether it's in a big seminar or one-on-one, stay in touch, write
yes.
to me, email me with questions.
I will.
If it's not working,
thank you.
Let me know. That only has
Apparently,
happened one time where someone has said it's not working.
Well, no, but I mean, the way you explained it makes. I mean, I understand it probably more on a gut level than I have before. So that's really important.
Great. So now it's up to you to practice in the micro moments, to remember that there's no way to fail, to remember that it's about acceptance, not willpower.
Mm-hmm.
That it's a growing a muscle.
Right.
The more you work it, the more it grows.
Right.
And the benefits, though, are immediate, because regardless of whether, you find that great guy to date next week or the week after or the week after, right
mm-hmm.
now you're having a new kind of relationship with yourself. And that really is, a great blessing.
Yes.
So
it is. Thank you.
In these last moments, let me just check with you and see, because this is your chance, if there's
okay.
anything about this or anything else that we've talked about, anything at all, really, that you would like to ask or get clarified or just have me address.
That's a lot. I think I need to adjust, kind of take a look at it and practice it and do
mm-hmm.
it. And then I might have some questions. But,
okay, great.
To have it explained in that way and to really understand it better than probably I have before is huge, and so I think that I need to be with that for a while.
Great. Well, I really honor your awareness of that, and give yourself lots of space and time for the reverberations to settle and for those nuances to appear. As I said, I'm happy to continue to be there for you, and the truth is that if you have questions or concerns that come up and you share them with me, I'm sure they'll also be valuable for other people, and in one forum or another, I'll get to add them to the mix. So, please do journal if it feels right to you. Keep track. And,
right.
Let's keep refining together.
Okay, great. I really
All right.
appreciate it.
So I'm going to, in a moment, I'm going to turn off the recording and then, don't hang up, but okay, it was one moment.
Okay, great.
You've been listening to Emotional Connection with Raphael Kushner. Our theme music is by Stephen Walters. For more information on this work, please visit my website, livingthequestions.org. This is also where you can reach me to ask questions and provide feedback, schedule your own private session by phone, get listings of upcoming events in your area, and learn about our unique year-long program. Once again, that's livingthequestions.org. Thank you for joining us, and here's to emotional connection.